Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Infinite Worlds podcast. I'm your host, Winston Ward, publisher of Infinite Worlds magazine. As always, I'm joined by my co-host, Nick the Tooth.
Hey, hey, man, how's it going? Good to have you back. Good to be back.
I know, brother. What's going on? What's going on? How is, I'm in Miami.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like I'm always having to update you on, and everyone, but I'm in Miami and hopefully this is it. I think last time we recorded, I was in Miami.
Yeah. Yeah. So far as I know, Miami is like the final destination, or maybe not final destination, but hopefully you're not there and not killed by like logs off a log truck or whatever.
Oh my God. Or a massive like category 7 hurricane.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, that one's probably a little more likely actually.
Yes.
I wouldn't even blame death stalking you in that case. It's just living in Miami.
But I tell you what, you know what? Today, what I did is I went down to the beach and I jumped in the water. Wow. And that is my, I'm such a dolphin and I'm solar powered. So for me, the ability to swim without a wetsuit year round, is amazing.
Today, my wife and I drove around a bunch of different places in Colorado all day. Mm-hmm. We're still trying to find like the right piece of property to buy. And almost all of the places we went had snow everywhere.
So,
you know, kind of like a different story going on, you know?
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
That's funny. Other than that, man, how are you? Everything good?
Everything's good, man. Everything's really good. I've just been catching up on some reading. Dude, I got to tell you, man, I'm going to lead off. We're going to talk about what we've been reading or watching. This is going to throw you for the biggest curveball because this threw me for the biggest curveball.
Okay.
So I started listening to Walter Isaacson as a biographer and he did the biography on Steve Jobs.
Okay.
And so I started listening to that and then I saw, and he's such a good writer. And I saw that he had done a biography on Elon Musk. And I'm not a big Elon Musk fan, right?
Right.
And so I was absolutely blown away to learn that Elon Musk is the biggest sci-fi geek in the world.
I mean, that doesn't surprise me, not at all. To me, I kind of figured that was what was behind all of his...
It's behind everything.
Yeah, all of his plans and dreaming and everything.
It's behind everything. And he's a video game fanatic to this day. Video game fanatic and to this day, sci-fi geek. And what blew me away was that his motivation for everything is related to sci-fi. And that he, above all else, it has nothing to do with the money. And I believe that because if you like follow the trajectory of what he's done, it's all been about, he just takes whatever money he gets and doubles it down on whatever is next. And he doesn't, he's just like, I don't care if I lose it all and I'm bankrupt. For me, I would be on the beach. You know what I mean? But he is just doubling down and everything is the motivation. Number one is save humanity. And so I don't know, man.
I'm a doubter. Sorry, dude.
I know, but you got to listen to the biography. That's what I'm saying. So the thing is, though, is he's got pretty severe like Asperger's, right?
Okay.
This is what I'm getting out of the book. This is what I got out of it because I finished it. So he becomes this idea that humanity needs saving and that he's going to do everything he can to save it no matter what, becomes like fixated in some part of his brain. And he just goes like a million miles an hour towards that and gambles everything on it. But if you look at it, it was like he became, even in the 90s, fixated on climate change and was like, we've got to have electric cars. We've got like someone who's like has a fixation problem, right? And is like, we got to have electric cars. We got to have electric cars. So that's the motivation behind that. Then the belief that humanity is going to perish if we don't colonize other planets. That was the whole SpaceX thing. And everything is towards that. The only thing, the biggest mistake that he made where he completely went off the rails was Twitter. And his motivation, I guess, for that was free speech. But it seemed like from the book that once he got to that point, something broke in his brain and he just, I don't know, because that's where he lost me. Even in the book, I was like, I cannot, this is hard to listen to because it's so ridiculous.
Here's what I think about Elon Musk, to your point here, actually, is that I think it's possibly true that he did start off with those motivations. You know, those ambitions were to, you know, be a legendary hero of mankind. And the only way to do it was to do these never before done things, get to Mars, you know, make electric cars a thing, et cetera, et cetera. It's possible that those were his actual ambitions and not just the mask he put on in order to generate revenue. See, that's how I look at it, is that he could say that he was trying to do it. But to me, it seems like he saw a market where he could extract capital by leaning into these promises, changing the future and whatever, what have you. Okay, either one of those things could be true about him. I'd be willing to believe either one of those things. But to me, I think because whether or not it was because he actually cared a lot or because he wanted the image and the capital and the influence, he was getting almost exclusively good praise, like high praise and quality praise from people. Like everybody thought, even myself back in the day, to me, the thing that really kind of disengaged me from him in the first place was way before Twitter. It was when he joined the Trump, I don't know, I guess the Trump presidency as like a technical spokesperson or whatever that was. And then one, that he did that at all. And two, that he left immediately because the two people couldn't, you know, they were both so egotistical, they couldn't work together to solve any problems or whatever. And that's when the cracks in the facade started for me. But either way, after he got on Twitter and after he started taking himself as the product into the public sphere where he could witness criticisms, he melted down under the criticism.
Totally.
Like, more than anyone I've ever seen. Almost.
Ever.
just completely withered under it. And because of that, he became like a reactionary.
Totally. And I think the pressure of running these companies, but also, Winston, it's really like a sci-fi kind of drama, like biopic, where, you know, power absolutely and fame absolutely corrupts. And to me, that's what happened.
Oh, yeah.
He got so drunk on it.
And he surrounds himself with sycophants too, you know. In his day-to-day life, he's not surrounding himself with people that are questioning him.
Absolutely. And when you read, you would love the biography because it's saying almost everything that you're saying. That's what I was getting at, is that when that turn happened, it just became so hard to listen to because you're like, wait a minute, I was invested in this guy's story. And now I'm like, oh my gosh. It's like Dune 2, right? Where you're right. Just like, oh, dude, don't do that. But
you either die a hero or you live long enough to see yourself become a villain.
Yeah, where's that quote from? Who said that?
And it's one of the Batman. I think it's Harvey Two-Face.
Okay.
Batman, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong about that. But I think that's where the quote might come from, well before that. That's just where it was popularized, I think.
Okay. Well, you're absolutely right. That's what you're saying is exactly what the book is, where you're like, yeah, I liked him. And, you know, and then you start re-questioning his motivations. But I do think his original motivations were pure.
I'm willing to believe that. I really am. Because, you know, people change over time. And the way he is now doesn't necessarily mean that's how he's always been.
Exactly.
I'm in a Facebook group, and it's one of my favorite Facebook groups, and it's called Elon Musk is a Philip K. Dick Villain. And if there's ever been a person in history that is like a villain from a Philip K. Dick novel, it is definitely Elon Musk. He even has the weird name like a villain from a PKD book would have. He has a chance to redeem himself too. He's still got all this power and all of this. Look, electric cars are probably a good idea. People complain, oh, electric cars aren't fully green. It's true, obviously, but the amount of energy used to power electric cars is far less than internal combustion engine.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just the truth. It is a good step in the right direction for humanity, in my opinion.
Huge step.
Although I think there are other better steps that we need to get to. It is still better than it was, or getting there. And I don't necessarily give him all the credit because a lot of electric cars were being developed way before that. But he did, I mean, I will admit it, he did kickstart that injury.
Absolutely, because there was that documentary, Who Killed the Electric Car?
Oh, yeah, I've seen it. It's a great documentary.
So electric cars had, they just kind of faded, and then he got into it and put all his money into it and kept. And it's a fascinating story because of how many times he almost went bankrupt on both SpaceX and Tesla. I mean, it's riveting. But like I said, then it just turned. It, you know what it reminded me of? One of my favorite books was House Harkonnen, where it's one of the prequels, and Brian Herbert, I think, he went back and rewrote with another author a lot of his dad's stories. And this was about the Baron Harkonnen, who's like the worst villain ever. But in House Harkonnen, he's a hero.
Right.
And eventually he takes that turn. And so it reminds me of that. It's like, oh, because I'm like you. And that's why I wanted to bring this up, because I knew this would be like so like crazy controversial, because I was just like that too, where I was like, oh man, I'm not going to like this book. But I did, at least the first 60%. Dude, I agree with you. That turn that he took at that point, I think it was the fame and the power. This is what I think. I don't think it was the money. I think it was the fame and the power that came.
It does mess people up and influence. And like I say, you know, when sycophants are telling you you're always right, and then later on when somebody criticizes you, your reaction is like, that can't be true. Somebody else already told me that wasn't true.
You're fired.
So, you know, it is what it is. This actually is kind of a decent segue into today's subject, our episode subject, because one thing that is featured very heavily on the three body problem is tech billionaires. That's definitely a thing that is happening in this show. So I guess that will be our attempt at a segue.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, we should probably go right into the real world tech billionaire story that is the backdrop of this bringing this to Netflix. So go ahead and you tell the story.
Oh, no. You tell the story. You brought it up. You tell the story. I've got my stuff prepared. Don't. So here's the deal. I've read the three novels twice.
Yeah, me too.
And then watched the series. And I went back and watched some of the Chinese series too. So I'm prepared up to that point, and I have a few data points or whatever, but I was saving the TV development story for you.
Yeah. So there's a tech billionaire in China who got he owned some type of a like games company, Yuzu Games.
And yeah, Yuzu Games.
So billionaire Lin Kui, and he bought up the rights to Three Body Problem and wanted to make it like Star Wars for China. Right. So he was big on it. But one of his subsidiaries, there was an executive there, and the executive, I don't know how to pronounce the name. I think it's Zhu Yao, but he was a former executive in Lin Kui's company that held the rights to Three Body Problem. And he was demoted and said that he wasn't doing a good job. And so he got so bitter about it that he went on the dark web. This is so tech, right? This tech billionaire and one of his employees, the employee was demoted, was angry about it, went on the dark web and started to acquire poisons. He was inspired by Breaking Bad. And so wanted to be like this chemist, and he poisoned his boss. And the guy died. He died. He actually died.
He murdered the guy. And the guy died the day after the series premiered on Netflix.
Oh, my gosh.
In March of 2024. So just like earlier this month, this happened.
No, he died earlier. They police arrested Zhu Yao.
He died in 2020.
Yes.
Zhu Yao was sentenced to death this month.
That's right. A day after Three Body Problem premiered. How insane is that?
That's one of the more wild production development stories we've had a chance to tell on this. We've told some pretty crazy ones. A lot of these production stories get pretty wild. I didn't read too much about the development there, but I read that and I was like, that is just crazy. And you know, nobody wins in a situation like that.
No, one guy's dead. The other guy's been sentenced to death. No, nobody wins.
And the show's still on TV, you know? It's just so weird, man. Guys, if you have a problem, if you're demoted or don't Walter White people. You don't need to poison anybody. God. That is not the answer to your problems, guys.
No.
Don't commit suicide or poison someone else. Keep it together at least that much, guys. That's my request of you. That's what I hope of you.
I have a question for you as we're about to jump into this.
Sure.
I never watched the Chinese adaptation.
Yes.
How was that?
I hadn't heard that a Chinese television show had been made. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw it come up on the streaming services, I think I saw it on Hulu, actually, I got confused because I was like, one, I thought this show was going to be on Netflix, not Hulu. And two, I thought I would have heard about the release. You know, I thought I would have learned more about the release of this show that I've been anticipating for a while, and I hadn't. So I started playing it, and then I realized like almost immediately that it was not the production that I had been anticipating, but another production that had been made in China.
Mm.
And it wasn't what I was expecting. And I was kind of taken aback. And you guys might have heard me on a previous episode of the podcast where I was kind of exasperated. This is kind of lame of me, but I had been looking for the westernized adaptation. Not because I wanted them to westernize the plot or the characters in any way, only because I wanted to see Western production value. Because Western production value, American film production value is probably still the best in the world.
So I take it the production value is kind of weak.
It did not impress me. And the acting initially didn't impress me either. And so because of it, I was like, what? I thought at first that it was a vignette, like a show inside of a show, where it was going to zoom out from that and we were going to get the real show and they were going to have been watching like a low budget Chinese version of it in the show. Or something like that, some meta thing that I hadn't anticipated. It didn't turn out to be that way, but I will say this. After I finished watching the American version, American, English, British, the Netflix version, I then went back and watched a couple of episodes of the Chinese version, and it's much better than I thought it was going to be.
Oh, okay.
It is quite a bit better than I thought it was going to be, and certainly closer to the events of the book in terms of the locations and the characters and, you know, how the characters interact with each other. So that being said, I'm not going to talk about that series too much in this episode.
Yeah, I wanted to get that out of
there. Yeah, because I haven't watched enough of it and you haven't watched any of it.
No, I
haven't watched. All I will say is this, is that my initial judgment of it on the previous episode of the podcast was a little unfair. And I regret that. So I'm definitely going to give it a more serious chance going forward.
Awesome.
Okay, so that being said, let's talk about the Netflix. I'm kind of excited about this because we've mentioned this so many times on the podcast.
I know.
I first learned about the novels probably right around the same time I started Infinite Worlds in 2019. So at the time when I first learned about them, the books were still fairly new, probably the newest of the books was only maybe 10 years old. The English translation hadn't even made it to America until 2012. So they were still pretty new. You know, they'd only been over here for about 7 years. And they definitely hadn't started, to my knowledge, hadn't gained a lot of popularity. What actually happened was I decided when I started the magazine that I wanted to know as much about the big books that shook up the industry of science fiction all the way back through history. And I wanted to get them all. And I had listened to several of the original classics. And then I was like, you know what? Let's do something modern. What's shaken up the industry lately? And then I saw that Three Body Problem was the first Asian written novel to win the Hugo Award for Best Science Fiction Novel. And I was like, oh, okay, the very first Asian sci-fi, not just Chinese, but all of Asian science fiction is incredible. You know, it's got a rich history and it's, you know, something that deserves to be in the spotlight. And the fact that this book was the very first Asian written book to win that award really kind of surprised me. So I was like, okay, that seems like an important book to read. And then I started reading it and I was hooked. It's definitely a hard science fiction novel with lots and lots of science and technical talk. And you can call it dry or whatever, but the ideas just keep getting better and improving as the story goes on. So I was so into it. And that's why I've dropped the name many times over the course of this podcast. When I heard that they were making a show for it, I think I might have mentioned it on the podcast many, many episodes ago, that they sold the rights internationally and there was a huge bidding war and the final bidding was the $1 billion figure. For the rights. And I knew that it was going to end up being this big production. And then now the production's finally come, and now we can talk about it, and that's very exciting for me.
It's unbelievable. I have to question that $1 billion number, though, because I thought that it went to Amazon. It was like $1 billion, and it went to Amazon, and I kind of looked that up, and now it's on Netflix. I was like, well, if you pay $1 billion for something, you're going to produce it. What are you going to just let it lapse, or you know what I mean? So, and I can't imagine Netflix, maybe.
Here's what I'm quoting.
I saw that quoted also.
At the time when it was being bid, there were a bunch of headlines where the bid being listed was $1 billion. And that was for Amazon, who definitely had $1 billion. The actual amount paid is
probably a lot of money.
Let me put it this way. According to themanual.com, they had a budget of $25 million per episode, which seems like a lot, but that only amounts to $200 million.
Yeah.
You know, because there's only 8 episodes of the show. Yeah. That's only a fifth of $1 billion. But that doesn't include the rights. You know what I mean? That's just the production cost.
Yeah.
Could the $200 million plus another potentially $800 million add up to $1 billion? I don't know.
Well, and also, you know, that we only saw this series that we're going to talk about right now. This season is just a season. It's not. They didn't finish the stories, the books.
I guess this is a good time to say that there will almost certainly be spoilers in this episode. There are going to be spoilers in this episode. So if you're listening to this and don't want anything spoiled, please stop
go
listening.
Go watch it now.
Yeah, oh yeah, go watch. Hit pause right now. Leave the room and watch all of the show, like the 8 hours of the show, and then come back and finish this episode.
Yeah.
With no break in the middle. So that, you know, you don't lose the momentum. And also, while you're paused, read all 3 novels, too.
I just want to say that, you know, as we start this, you know, I've listened to each of the books twice, maybe 3 times. And I thought the opening scene was so good. I could not believe how good. What did you think?
Is the opening scene, you're referring to the opening scene of the show as translated from the book? Is that what you're asking?
Where her father is being stoned.
It was perfect.
It was perfect.
It was exactly like I imagined it. In fact, there were quite a few parts from the show that were how I imagined them from the book. But that very first scene, I was like, man, this is exact.
I thought it was even better. It brought it to life in such a way that I was just like, wow. It felt so historical. I love history. And I don't know much about China. So it just felt so historical. I was like, if this is what it was like, this is crazy during the revolution, right?
Yeah, the Cultural Revolution in China. And, you know, it was children basically running the revolution and
just blown away,
you know, not really having an idea of what they're talking about, trying to bring in a new world without having the knowledge or understanding to do so, but having just the brute force. And we talked about reactionaries already, and that's what it was. It was just like the swelling of reactionaries. There can't be God, there can't be physics, because it might somehow end up eventually supporting religion. It's disheartening to see people behave that way, even in fiction, because you know they did really behave that way. My wife and I watched this together, and she also doesn't know a ton about Chinese. I'm not going to sit here and pretend I'm an expert on Chinese history by any means, but after I read the book the first time, I did, you know, go down the Wikipedia rabbit hole about all this stuff. So I'm, you know, armchair educated, but it really was how things are. And, you know, it's how revolutions often are. You know, really young, wide-eyed, sort of naive people get swayed into these frenzies, and out of it comes these results. But if you haven't seen the show, it's a really messed up scene. It's extremely well executed.
Very good. So why don't you give a little breakdown? I know the book is long.
Right.
It's hard, but why don't you give kind of just a quick plot summary before we talk about individual parts of it?
We're going to talk about the plot right now. We're going to talk about the novel, The Three-Body Problem, okay, first. And the novel, The Three-Body Problem, that the show is named after, is the first novel in a trilogy called The Remembrance of Earth's Past Trilogy, all right? And these 3 books make one story. It's not unlike other trilogies. These lead right from one into the next. Some trilogies do that, some don't. And they span a great amount of time and space. All right, but the first book, The Three-Body Problem, does not span all that much time or space. It starts in the 60s in China and ends in the modern day. So it spans, you know, roughly 50 years approximately. And the plot is that during this Cultural Revolution, there is a young scientist whose father, who's also a scientist, is publicly executed without trial for being a physicist and having a scientific way of viewing the world during this Cultural Revolution, where they're trying to rid the world of Western scientific ideas. And of course, Western scientific ideas just mean proven science, but these reactionaries don't see it that way. Okay, but because of this, this character stops believing in people. She becomes a nihilist and thinks the world is doomed because of our behavior, which of course kind of, you know, plays out in real life. I mean, it's pretty easy for you to
lose your faith in humanity, right?
To lose your faith in humanity, especially when you know that the events that lead up to this really did happen to people. But anyway, this character, her name is Ye Wenjie. She's a Chinese astrophysicist and a daughter. She ends up being captured, but through a series of events, she ends up working at a Chinese radio transmitter, like a giant transmitting station, because of her history with physics and astrophysics. And because they killed so many of the skilled scientists, that they basically end up needing her help. But while she's there, she learns that science has been discovered that allows human beings to send signals out into the deepest parts of space, where before it had been impossible because of the gravity of our solar system prevents our radio signals from traveling too far. We just don't produce strong enough radio signals. But she learns that if you bounce these signals off of the sun acts as a booster, like an antenna booster, and sends them everywhere. So she does that. She sends the message out into space, you know, we're here on Earth, hello. Then time passes. Then some years later, about 6 years later, she receives a response from an alien civilization. And it basically says, again, guys, I'm spoiling things for you, so I apologize. It says, I got your message. I'm a pacifist on this alien planet. Please don't send any more messages. I got this one and I'm the only one who saw it. But if you send any more, someone else will see it. And then our planet will invade your planet. So Wenjie sees this message, thinks about it for a little while, and then decides, well, good. So she invites them to come conquer our planet. Okay, so years go by, decades go by, and all of a sudden that the scientists on Earth start killing themselves and kind of going crazy. Nobody can figure it out. Meanwhile, this video game starts appearing to people, and this video game sends you to an alternate reality, like a completely immersive alternate reality, where a historical representation of this other planet is depicted, and the players have to solve a unsolvable problem. Okay, so I guess this is the point where we should talk about the three-body problem itself. So the three-body problem refers to a mathematical problem where it is so far impossible, and this is true, it's so far impossible to determine the movements of three objects in one another's fields of gravity, and they can't be predicted after a certain period of time. And I'm no mathematician, so I won't pretend to understand the math here, but I do understand the layman's definition of the concept. So while players, mostly scientists, are immersed in this game trying to solve this, we learn, the reader learns, that these scientists that are killing themselves are doing so because they are being forced to end their research. Their research is being disrupted. And what we learned is this other planet, who they call Trisolaris in the novels, and they call them the Shanti in the series, have created a thing called a photon, which is a subatomic particle that they've turned into a sentient supercomputer and launched
a sophon, right? They called us.
What did I call it?
A sophon.
What did I call it?
I think you called it a photon.
Oh, I apologize. A sophon. A sophon, which is actually a photon. It is a photon that they've
exactly.
They've manipulated it. They've expanded it, written computer language on it, and condensed it again. So it is itself now a sentient, an AI computer. And because of the concept of quantum entanglement, they're able to launch one of these photons all the way to Earth ahead of their invading fleet. And these photons are then able to travel around Earth as fast as the speed of light and disrupt scientific experiments going on. So we're no longer able to learn anything from the results of experiments because they're interfering with them and creating false results, confusing results, impossible results.
In like the Large Hadron Collider and different types of, yeah.
All the different kinds of research that would advance humans' understanding of physics. And they've basically decided that human beings advance technologically much faster than the Trisolarians or the Shanti, because human beings do historically advance very, very, very quickly. Well, at least recently. Even compared to the 100,000 years of human development where no industrial revolution took place, is still fast compared to the development of the Trisolarians, because the three-body sun system of their home world keeps destroying their civilization over and over and over. And they have to start over and over and over again.
And we don't have that kind of an interruption.
Yeah, we get continuous development. So they've crippled our science in an effort to prevent us from overtaking them technologically during the 400 years it will take them to reach us from their home planet. Because even though they've invented almost as fast as light travel, they have to speed up and slow down. And that process makes the journey take almost 400 years. Meanwhile, there's a bunch of scientists who kind of learn what's going on and set out to stop them in whatever way they're able to do. And I don't want to give you all of the details of the story, but that's basically the plot summary of the first novel in the series.
Yeah, and so the real drama comes from how the people that know about this invasion, who's going to stop it, what factions are going to be involved in trying to stop it. There's a faction that's actually trying to help the Trisolarans or the Shanti.
Right, right.
And
yeah, it's after Ye Wenjie invited the aliens, a bunch of other people basically started following her. So there are a bunch of humans on Earth acting as agents for the alien culture and trying to undercut human efforts along with the alien technology here on Earth.
Yeah, and it's amazing how a lot of times for me in drama, when there's a time jump like that, because you lose so many characters, it kind of, I lose interest. But this one, I was so riveted the entire time. I don't know, it was amazing.
Is this in reference to the show or the book?
The show.
Okay, yeah. I was going to ask, that was my next question. Now that we've covered basically the plot of the show and we've covered some production history, I was going to ask, so what did you think? What did you think of the show?
I thought it was amazing. I binged it. I haven't binged anything like this in a while. I was binging and I just kind of fell off in the fourth season for All Mankind. This is one I binged all the way through. I was like, once I got into it, I was just absolutely entranced. I thought it was really, really good. The only character that I just, after a while, I got really tired of, I don't know how you felt about it, was in the show, was Eliza Gonzalez, one of the main characters, the woman. She's a model, and it just felt like she was just playing a model in every one of the scenes. She's had this look like a model. After a while, I started resenting that.
I do feel like that was a bad casting choice. I think a lot of people are, kind of unhappy with that casting choice.
Really?
Okay, so here's the deal. I think the biggest problem people have with this show is, and this is not a personal problem, I don't have this problem, but a lot of people's problem with this is the choices to change the characters from the characters in the book to new characters that sort of represent the original characters. Okay, so only a handful, I guess, of the characters in the show share the name or description of the characters from the book. In fact, some of the characters in the show are composites of multiple characters from the book. And, when you gender swap and race swap characters in a story, it definitely inflames some people's sensibilities. Some people are like, hey, keep it true to the story and everything.
For me with the book, honestly, I think because some of the Chinese names were so unfamiliar to me, it was very hard for me to grasp and keep track of who was who all the time in the book.
I've definitely had that problem before. That's one of the reasons I read it a second time, is because especially when it's just sort of minor characters who do something important. So you want to remember who they are, but they're not mentioned enough.
yeah,
to remember their names. But the show definitely just kind of amalgamates characters to do the function of the characters from the story. Not true of all of them. Like Ye Wen-ji, the scientist who sends the signal originally, is almost identical to how she's represented in the book and played perfectly as an old woman by Rosalind Chow.
Perfect.
Literally could not have been a better casting choice. She was so good. I loved her. And, you know, I am watching Deep Space Nine again with my wife. And so it was really great to see her again. And good old Star Trek actors back in sci-fi is always great. Honestly, never expected to see Keiko O'Brien in another major role again. It's been 30 years since she was last in a big role, or 25 years. And it's great to see her back. So I'm really happy about that. And I think a lot of the other casting is really good too. I think Benedict Wong as Da Xie was as good a casting as you could do.
He was amazing.
He's ideal. When I imagine Da Xie in my brain, I didn't know it, but I was picturing Benedict Wong.
Oh, he killed it. He was amazing.
Having a British accent and everything, because they're all from different parts of the world now and all that.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of threw me off from what I was used to from that character, but he ends up pulling the character off pretty well.
Because he's such a good actor. I mean, he just, I couldn't take my eyes off him.
All that said, grievances with gender swapping and race swapping aside, you know, background swapping and, you know, mixing and switching around characters, all of those grievances aside. Yeah, I agree. Aiza Gonzalez is not well cast. And, you know, honestly, in no way do I believe that you can't be a beautiful person, a beautiful woman or a beautiful person, and still be a scientist. Obviously, you can. You know, but if you're spending all of your time being a scientist and developing nanofibers and all this stuff, who is also appearing like a model every single day?
It should have been. That's why, like, in Contact with Jodie Foster, right? She's just so good, you know?
And, you know, that's a Hollywood thing. Hollywood wants to have somebody attractive. So somebody who's watching the show is like, oh, yeah. You know, and there's another character, the Raj, you know, is like an ultra handsome military guy, the Indian military, Raj Varma. He's based on it. And, you know, he's ultra handsome or whatever, too. To me, it's just like a little distracting, kind of wooden acting, ultra handsome. It's like, okay, is that necessary? But it is big budget TV, mainstream television. And it's something happens.
But great acting, though. Like Liam Cunningham was amazing. And Alex Sharp was amazing, who was Will Downing, the guy dying of cancer. I thought he was great.
They did set up all of the same storylines, just with slightly different characters. Alex Sharp is Will Downing, who the character in the Chinese novel is named Yun Tianming. And it's a great character. It is one of the best characters from the book. And I think Will Downing is a great choice to westernize if you're going to westernize a character to do it. Speaking of westernizing characters and the blowback from that, just know, guys, that Benedict Wong himself said that the writer of the novels was happy about the idea of turning the story into a cast of world characters.
More of an international,
He blessed that decision by the Benioff and Weiss. Yep. By the way, guys, in case we haven't mentioned it yet, the show was created and showrun by David Benioff and D.B. Weiss, who very famously did Game of Thrones.
Yeah, and I read some criticism where some critics were like, yeah, it's, you know, it's hard to connect and all that. I didn't feel that. I really liked the show. I mean, I loved it.
So here's the deal. I watched it with my wife all the way through. She watched every episode with me. And I faced some challenges watching it because they were swapping stuff around. So I was kind of being distracted by that. But my wife, who was watching it for the first time, was like, this is one of the best shows on TV.
Yeah.
You know, she's like, this is a really good show. You know, it was really funny because she was like, how come you didn't tell me these books were like this? And I had to be like, because it's impossible to describe the three body problem to someone because there's so much happening in the book that trying to tell the story out loud to somebody is impossible. So I just had to be like, I'm just really reading this book and all this crazy stuff is happening in it.
And it's pretty fairly hard sci-fi. And I think that's where the show was really amazing, because I don't think that book is going to appeal to a lot of people. If you don't like hard sci-fi, you're not going to like that book.
Or the whole trilogy is like that. Here's the thing, is that normally I'm pretty lukewarm towards really hard sci-fi, where every technical thing is explained in great detail, and where problems are explained in great detail, and their solutions are the way bodies behave under certain conditions in space.
Yeah, it's like astrophysics. You're just like...
But this one was different for me. A true story. Like, I actually was like, I love hearing that particular side. And, you know, it's really honestly, hats off to Shishin Liu for having the wherewithal to write this. Hard sci-fi is really difficult to write. You know, you have to know a lot of stuff, and you have to have a very strong understanding of those things.
Yeah, you have to have a strong understanding of the science, and then you have to somehow translate that into drama.
Right.
This is, you know, this isn't George Lucas who's taking basically very fantastical elements.
Right.
You know, Flash Gordon is basically what Star Wars is. There's no hard science fiction in it.
Yeah, no way, dude. It's midichlorians.
Yeah, exactly. It's the moment he tried to get into explaining anything, the whole thing went off the cliff. It was like, dude, you don't have to explain anything. It's the
and that's the difference. You know, he's not writing hard science fiction. And most people, like you said, most people don't want hard science fiction. Most people want a story, period. You know, the story is the most important thing. But I think the Three-Body Problem's story is really astounding. And I don't want to tell you guys too much about the upcoming series or the next two books, but the scope of the story is expanded in such a way that it's hard to wrap your head around it.
Exactly. I know. You know what I loved? One of my favorite parts of my favorite episode, this particular installment, I guess season we would call it, is from the book, where to me it was way more, I loved it in the book, but it was much more powerful in the series, was when they introduced the wall facers.
So I had actually gotten confused. Apparently, the Wall Facer Project isn't announced until the beginning of the second novel. I read them all together. You know, they all just went right back to back to back. So when one ends, the next one begins, it's blurred together.
I think that was really smart to do, because the Wall Facers are such a big, big element, right?
To me, the Wall Facer Project is the plot of the novels.
I know. And I think it was very smart to introduce it in the first season, so all of a sudden the second season didn't feel like it was something so completely new. It kind of like trailed into where we're going, right?
Right. And I think I do agree. I do think that's smart. I think the casting of Jovan Adepo, I think is his name, or Jovan Adepo, the actor who plays Saul Durand, I think he's a great choice if you're going to Americanize or Westernize this story, because the character, that character, the Wallfacer, is such an incredible character. To me, Luoji is the character of the novel series.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's a really good strong argument to say that there are other characters, possibly you could say that...
Like Ye Winji, right?
Yeah, Ye Winji, but she's really only important kind of towards the beginning of the story. You know, but I do think Luoji's arc of the story is the most important. And I'm really glad that they picked an actor who's really likable.
Yes.
Because that's what you want, is a character that you kind of relate to.
And you know, it was so cool. You know, it was so cool. I think I watched that last episode, the Wallfacer episode, twice, because I loved how he was like, well, I'm not doing it. And they basically explained, whatever you decide is up to you. So even you declining it is part of your strategy. So that's okay too. So he was in a position where he couldn't even decline the position. It was so cool, man.
That happens in the book, and the way that people are looking at him, he even says, is everybody going to look at me that way from now on? That line isn't from the book, but that attitude is lifted straight from the book. And the way Luoji reacts to being named the Wallfacer in the book, the series, is so incredibly human and cool and interesting. And his eventual metamorphosis into the person he ends up being in the story is so incredible. And I think it's going to be fun to watch this actor do that.
Yeah.
Overall, I'm going to give this show, on a scale from 1 to 10, I'm going to give it a 7.5 or an 8. Overall, the things they did that create friction with audiences are really, really heavily overshadowed by the quality of the show, the watchability of the show, the production value. And I think the cast, except for, I do agree with you about Aiza Gonzalez being miscast, but otherwise the show has a very strong cast.
What did you think about the VR goggle element when those came in?
I think they did a great job with that. You know, what's really funny is that right before I started watching the show, I had to wait till my wife and I had a day off together so we could watch it together. But right before I started watching it, I saw Hideo Kojima post a photo of him wearing the helmet from the show.
No way.
If you don't follow Hideo Kojima on Instagram, please do, because he's just awesome. He just posts really fun, cool stuff. Just things
he is.
He's just the coolest dude, you know?
Dude, I told you before, I'm playing his masterpiece, Death Stranding, right now. It just keeps getting weirder and weirder and trickier. And this dude is, I feel like I'm inside of his brain and he's on acid. Because as I'm playing and I'm like, I'm not playing anymore. And then I go, I'm like, I can't, I got to go play. It's so crazy. He is a tripper. Oh, that's so cool. I mean, I didn't see that post from him. But yeah, I liked the VR elements because in this very hard sci-fi story, it introduces like this element of fantasy.
Yes.
I liked that. I thought, I was like, oh yeah, this is really cool, man. Very cool.
What's sad though is that I tried to describe this book to my wife initially and described the three-body problem itself, the game and everything from the book. And it took a pretty upfront place in this show as well. And they did a great job with it. And it really does give the show a really diverse feel. And I don't mean diverse as in like the cast is diverse. I mean, as in, oh, we're in 60s China. Oh, we're in the modern times. Oh, we're in the English Middle Ages. Oh, we're in ancient China. You know, oh, we're in, you know, all of these different periods with different costuming and different weaponry and that kind of thing. So it gives the show a lot of like spice, you know, while we're here on Earth. But I have always hated that they chose to call it the three-body problem. And I've hated that the trilogy is referred to as by most people as the three-body problem trilogy. Not because I think the book is bad or anything. I think the book is fantastic. And I think the show is fantastic. But that plot element, the video game in the story plot point, is so almost insignificant. It is insignificant compared to the grander plot of the series, the Absolutely. Book trilogy.
Yeah.
So to me, I'm afraid that it's going to make people think that that's going to be an ongoing part of the story from now on, unless they radically change the books. It just isn't.
Yeah.
But I guess the three-body problem, not referring to the video game, but referring to the reason that the Trisolarians left Trisolaris in the first place, does give it a little bit, you know, that's kind of how I try to justify it. It's like, if you think about it, the problem is not the video game. That's not what they're referring to. They're referring to the Trisolarians' motivation to invade Earth.
Exactly. Why would you leave? Why would you leave? I think it's genius. It's like,
we have to leave because we have a little problem. Yeah. We have a three-body problem.
Yes, you know? Exactly. That is unsolvable.
The unsolvable problem. So, you know, buckle up. Okay. Hey, man, I do believe we'll do, I mean, I not believe, I know we'll do another episode when the next season comes out.
Oh. Yeah, I just hope it's not going to be forever, isn't it?
Me too. Me too. Actually, it hasn't even been announced yet. I've heard that they planned for all three. With these producers, you know, this besides these guys show running it, the Game of Thrones guys, it also has Rian Johnson and Brad Pitt as producers and Rosamund Pike as producers. So it's got a real team of heavy hitters behind it. So I don't expect that it'll just be canceled and that'll be it.
I hope not. I hope not. I can't wait. Yeah, this was a good one, man. This was really good.
Absolutely.
I'm really stoked we got to do this one, and I'm glad they brought this to fruition. I'd really love to hear why Amazon backed out.
You know, hopefully this show continues and makes some waves, and then eventually we get a backstory behind what all happened in all of those boardrooms and board meetings and everything. And
besides the murder and the... Yeah.
No, that would have to be part of the story.
Right? In the upcoming execution.
Oh, Lord.
So heavy.
Okay, so guys, definitely tell us what you think of the show, both shows and the novels as well. And again, we'll come back with more when more of this show drops. So until then, you know.
Walk.
Dude, again, great talking to you.
I know.
Always fun. And we'll do another one next week, man.
Let's do it, man. Awesome. Awesome show. Adios.
Peace, dude.
Guys, if you're enjoying the Infinite Worlds podcast, you could definitely check out more Infinite Worlds related stuff by visiting our website, infiniteworldsmagazine.com. There you can subscribe to Infinite Worlds magazine. It's a full-color, ad-free science fiction magazine featuring stories, comics, and illustrations from creators all over the world. You can also sign up to our mailing list. You can follow us on Instagram at Infinite Worlds Magazine or on Twitter at IW Sci-Fi Mag. Also, you can find Nick the Tooth on Instagram at Nick the Tooth and follow his wild escapades. Theme song was written by Christopher Whitaker, and our podcast is produced by Andrew Alonso.